Hello, I'm Katia Damborski, Boats Online Yachts Editor. Welcome to this special big boat interview, where this week I caught up with serial superyacht owner Anthony Shea, a sport fishing legend and the man behind the Bad Company fleet. When his new 53-metre Darwin yachting model is delivered, he'll have a fleet of 10 yachts and boats, which he uses to facilitate a global fishing programme that takes him around the planet fishing for marlin. Anthony tells me what inspired his love for fishing, why he loves Darwin yachting models so much, and whether he plans on adding any more vessels to the Bad Company fleet. We also get into the story behind the distinctive name, Singing Not Included. I hope you enjoy the interview. Okay, great. So why don't you just start by telling me where you're joining us from?
Well, today I'm in beautiful Miami, Florida.
Lovely. And I hear that you're about to go on joining a world tour.
We are. We're on leg four. In this particular leg, we're not disclosing our location until we're finished for security reasons.
Okay, cool. So you've achieved something which I can only imagine is kind of every sport fisher's dream, which is obviously to have all these yachts in different locations around the world and to be going on these incredible angling adventures. So what started that passion for boating and fishing?
I've been fishing all my life as a young child. My dad took me fishing when I was, 3-4 years old. And it's just been in my blood ever since. I mean, many of my fishing colleagues all around the world understand exactly what I'm talking about. It is quite an addiction. And I see it as a blessing because it really allows us to really pursue the outdoors. And you add that together with machinery such as yachts and engines and equipment such as rod and reels and fishing equipment, electronics. You put all that together, it's just a secret, unbelievable, perfect combination for a disaster. So I'm very blessed to have it hook me instead of me hooking fish.
Nice, a good disaster, I hope.
Yeah, it's been fun. It's been fun. It's been ongoing. It connects me to the outdoors and allows me to get through my life and managing the regular pressures of life, whether it's family, raising children, or building companies and taking care of payroll and being an entrepreneur. All of that, fishing has always been a key ingredient in my life.
Yeah, it's quite nice. You have that escape that you can just get out on the water and get to fishing. So when you were younger, did you envision that you ever would have this incredible fleet and these incredible opportunities?
No, I didn't. But my personality is always trying to, stretch beyond our reach. And the ocean is grand. It's amazing. And chasing these large species around the world, around the different oceans of the world, has really not been done before in history, certainly not in modern times. So, going to all three oceans, Pacific, Atlantic, and Indian, and looking for the very large, giant blue and black marlins and swordfish, a lot of it is pioneering, and it's a lot of fun trying to do the research.
Yeah, so obviously that is the key with the Bad Company fleet, is that they're all based in different locations. So you've got Central America, Bahamas, Africa, Portugal, and the East Atlantic coast, and then the new Darwin that's in build, which is going to the South Pacific and Indian Ocean. Am I right with that?
Yeah, and certainly with the recent tragedy, plans are and schedules are a bit up in the air, and we certainly are hoping for the best for that region as they sort out all the casualties. But because of that, that entire region, country, is disrupted, and I'm building, Darwin is in Antalya, Turkey. So, with this tragedy and then already the supply chain challenges, we don't know when we're going to take delivery. We certainly are hoping for the best, but that certainly may be delayed. But that brand new build is going to spend a couple of months in the Mediterranean, in south of France and in Greece, just as a shakedown to make sure that all the warranty items are done. But this boat is pretty unique. It is a support vessel, but will be used as a standalone. It's a 53-meter or 175 feet. And we're putting a helicopter hangar on it. So I'm putting my Bell helicopter in it. And then we're going to carry two game boats or fishing boats. One is a 32 Blackfin. That is very special to me. It is actually my very, very first twin diesel boat that I bought over 30 years ago and that I just bought back last year.
Oh, wow. It's an old boat. So, you must have to maintain her really well.
Well, we're completely rebuilding her from the keel up. So right now she's completely dismantled. So we're going to completely rebuild her. So my last boat is going to carry my first boat. I mean, not my very, very first boat, my very first twin diesel boat. I had Caterpillar 3208. It's the 1987 model. So we're going to put that boat on the 175, and then we're going to put a 43 release boat works also on it, you know, along with, you know, the inflatables and jet skis and, you know, other sort of toys. But it's going to be a standalone. It's not going to be, you know, following a white boat. And that boat, after warranty work is done in the Mediterranean, it's going to drop down the Suez Canal, and then it's going to stay in the Indian Ocean for a year and a half. So that entire Indian Ocean, obviously Maldives and all that are widely cruised in Southeast Asia. But far as fishing for giant marlin, there's been very, very little work done. So we're looking forward to it. The Seychelles and Madagascar and Somalia and all of those regions, whether it's mainland off of the east coast of Africa or some of the ridges and high spots there that are formed by the Seychelles, we're going to take a look. And having a helicopter is really going to help, because then I can fly the jet into a particular region, and then the helicopter can come pick me up and then take me up to 300 nautical miles to where the boats are. So that'll shortcut everything and allows me to get to the fishing grounds a lot faster.
Okay, wow. So I guess I spoke to Dan, your captain, and he said that sometimes the places that you go, this is his words, not mine, he described them as not exactly the garden spots of the world. So is that kind of correct? Are you just mainly following the fish, or are you getting a lot of out of the destinations as well?
Well, so it's a great question, but it's a complicated answer. So the Atlantic Ocean is a lot more, I don't even know the proper word to use. The Atlantic Ocean has been visited more by the modern sport fishermen because of the fact of the proximity to the east coast of America. The modern sport fishing, obviously, if you look at where it's originated, a lot of it is American, although there's quite a few Europeans that fish, and then there's also a nucleus in Australia because of the Great Barrier Reef. But most of the origins is from America. So because of this addiction, lifestyle, hobby, whatever you want to call it, it really becomes part of your life. It's more like golf. It's not like golf or tennis. It becomes really part of your life. And I think at the Atlantic, because of proximity to America, has a lot more notes of people going to fish different islands in the Atlantic. The next ocean that is, you know, is a little bit more rare is the South Pacific, you know, such as Tahiti and Bora Bora area. And then the least known is the Indian Ocean. So to your question, we really don't know where to go, because we really don't know. No one really knows where these big fish go. They don't stay in one area. They have big, giant, powerful tails. They move thousands of miles every year, and they're following the ocean for two reasons. Number one is to mate, and number two is to eat. So it's a big ocean out there, and you know they go to wherever they believe is the best for them to find those two objectives. So we really don't know. We certainly can go to an area in the Indian Ocean that's pretty, and we can have a margarita, but you know we're doing this to try to find giant black and blue marlin. And Indian Ocean has both. Atlantic Ocean only has blue marlin. Atlantic Ocean does not have black marlin.
Okay, and it's the marlin that you're fishing for, nothing else or other things as well?
Well, that's what we target. That's really the primary prize that we're going after. We love fishing. We like fishing for all types of things. I do, but this world tour is to go after giant marlin.
And this might be a stupid question, but is it catch and release, or are you kind of game fishing? What's the...
The majority will be for catch and release. The ultimate prize for traveling fishermen in the past have been trying to catch grounders. And there are lots of legendary teams back in the 80s and 90s that have traveled, and they have done extraordinarily well. One of our friends, James Roberts, that ran the French Look, he's caught over, I think, 25 or 30 grounders. We have not caught one yet. We've caught two that are probably right at that mark, but it's early. And also, we need to remember that the earth is decaying. So the fish that used to roam the seas 20, 30, 40 years ago is decaying. They're not as big. And we're in full support with IGFA, which is the International Game Fish Association, along with Stanford University. We're supporting and financially sponsoring satellite tags. So we'll be taking these satellite tags with us. And on a healthy female over 700 pounds, we're going to deploy a satellite tag on them. And that tag, because it broadcasts all types of data on a live basis, I forget what it is, but I think for something like a couple hundred days, it will broadcast every day where this fish is, how deep it's swimming, how fast it's swimming, and where it's at. And I think that's going to be really, really important data. There hasn't been satellite tags put into large female marlin. Marlins over 350 pounds are all female. They're the breeders, and they're obviously critical for reproduction. But there's very, very little information on them. And what we don't know is all the longliners, net fishermen, all the commercial fishermen out there, you know, they can be wiping out these, you know, amazing species that we just really don't know anything about them. I mean, we have smart people like Elon Musk and Steve Jobs, but they're not focusing on fish in the ocean. And so there's very, very little data.
That's you then. You're the Elon Musk of the ocean.
No, absolutely not. What I'm saying is there just had not been a lot of effort or resources from a private individual or private program to really help and assist the nonprofits such as IGFA on tagging these majestic animals. Yeah. We know about the equator. We know how the sun shines. We know that fish are cold water animals, and we know that there is tremendous temperature change in four seasons of the year above the equator and four seasons of the year below the equator. And we know that ocean currents all act very differently from the Atlantic to the Pacific to the Indian. And these fish are following a particular current. They're following a particular pattern. And, you know, we watch birds all the time, right? Or turtles. They go back to the same place to mate a lot of times. What does these giant marlins do? We don't know that. I don't think anybody knows that.
Okay. So you're doing the research, you're doing the joy of the fishing as well. What about the luxury of actually yachting? You mentioned, you know, jet skis and drinking margaritas. Is that part of it, or is that just a nice bonus of getting to be out on the water?
That's a nice bonus. And that's obviously something that I've always enjoyed. And, you know, part of this addiction is the travel and the adventure and the gorgeous weather and the water and water sports and spending time with family and friends and business associates. All those are great, you know, additives. But the world tour is hardcore, heavy duty, focus on giant blue marlin. So the last trip, I landed in South America. I got on a bulletproof van. I drove the 15 minutes in the car to the dinghy, got onto the dinghy. The dinghy got onto the 150, which is the other diamond. And I didn't touch land for 2 weeks.
Wow.
So it's pretty serious. It's straight trophy fishing.
And so you mentioned, so you've got the two diamonds then. Is there something about the diamonds that you particularly like?
I do, because I like their experience of building these vessels. I like their performance. I like the axe bow. The axe bow don't really bury, they just slice. I like their speed. And overall, I just like their simplicity. At the end of the day, you have to have a mothership to support your operations, but you don't want to have a fatigue factor supporting your mothership. So you want the mothership to be as self-contained and least amount of maintenance and be trouble-free. And because they're not you know, they're not shiny vessels. There's not as much cosmetic, and the systems are much, much simpler. So far, they've been great.
But correct me if I'm wrong, the new Dolmen that's in build now, this is the first boat that you've commissioned, is that right? The first big yacht?
Yes, that's correct. I have a Trinity 144 that I acquired on the market, and then the 150 Dolmen is a 2019, I think.
So what's been your experience commissioning, and also commissioning, you know, the first hull in a brand new series? That's a bit gutsy, isn't it?
A little bit. But I think knowing the folks at Dolmen and visiting the yard and interviewing the engineering team, the plant managers, and meeting with the owner, it gave me a lot more confidence. And of course, being a customer of Dolmen, only the 150. And Dan also been running Dolmen for, I think, 7 or 8 years now, just ultimately gave us a great deal of confidence.
All right. And is there any element on board all your yachts that you've kind of kept or replicated? Obviously, apart from things like the I guess, lots of space for fishing equipment and things like that. Is there anything else that you've kept across all of them?
Well, you know, we're going to, you know, obviously put some exercise equipment. There's going to be lots of outdoor patio equipment. I did have a custom-made jacuzzi put on deck, on the aft deck there. We're customizing the interior so that it does not have a dining room, but it has a one large living room. And the dining room is really just going to be al fresco, because everywhere that we're going to be going to is going to be pretty nice weather. But it's going to have 5 staterooms, which is pretty amazing for a support boat. The master is going to even have, you know, dual vanities in a bathtub that I'll probably never use. Along with 4 other guest staterooms, and then we'll house still up to 16 staff. So it's going to be pretty neat, because the crane is rated up to 34,000 pounds. So it's it'll lift the 43 footer and the 32 footer with ease.
Nice. Okay. Very well considered. And when you mention the staff or the crew that come on board, will it be, you know, marine scientists, people who want to get involved also with the marlin tagging?
You know, we're going to be tagging it ourselves, but there will be certain trips that we may bring on some marine biologists. The biggest issue for us is, where are these fish? So the ocean is massive, and these fish are, It's literally finding a needle in the haystack.
Yeah, and I guess you have just quite recently started the world tour, haven't you? You've only just really started getting out there and going to all these places.
Yeah, I'll give you an example. I've been fishing all my life, and fishing marlin all my life. We started in June, so we're going on 7 months, 8 months. I have caught more marlin above 500 pounds in the last 8 months than I have in 40 years.
Wow. So was that down the coast down in Portugal or elsewhere?
Yes. So Portugal, Madeira, Azores, and currently South America, which we'll review our location in probably another 3 weeks or so.
Okay, cool. Yeah, you're quite active on Instagram, aren't you? You seem to have a lot of people who really want to engage with what you're doing, which is always quite
nice. It's not a business. It's my passion. It will never become a business. There's no way to become a business with the budget that that I currently have to fuel this program. It's private. It's for me to chase my dreams. But being a self-made guy, you know, before I had money, I had the same burning desire for fishing. And what I noticed is, you know, rich people didn't like to share. They don't talk to somebody like me that had no money. So that's been permanently ingrained in me to share, because I remember the feeling of feeling stupid when I would want to have a conversation, because I'm in awe of their equipment. I'm in awe of their boats. And as sort of just a kid, you know, you get excited and you want to talk, and they just, you know, they just didn't want to engage. So I'm just giving back that way. And now they're blowing me up, because they want shirts and hats and more videos. And You know, that would, that's something that's kind of, it's neat, but it takes time, and it's not a business.
Yeah, it's trying to find the balance between living your life online and replying to all your fans, but also having your own kind of private life and switching off and stepping off the screen, I guess. But no, it's a nice ethos to have, giving back and letting people live vicariously through you on this incredible adventure.
Yeah, because they're addicted like me. They just at different levels. I mean, the ocean and fishing really is a real powerful combination.
Yeah, and you mentioned that your first boat would be going on board your last boat. So does that mean that there are no plans to expand the Bad Company fleet?
Oh no, no. As a matter of fact, we're going to shrink it when the world tour is over. So right now, if no more world events and everybody stays healthy and I can keep my team together, we're going to run until the end of 2025. 2025, the last year, is more like the coming home year. The boat is in 2025 is going to go to Kona, where I had a boat in the house for 18 years. So I have lots of friends there. So it's going to swim by Kona, Hawaii. And then after that, it's going to go to my hometown where I grew up and I was raised, where I learned fishing. That's Newport Beach, California. We're going to go there. We're going to go to Hawaii in June and July. We're going to go to California in August and September. And then October and November, we're going to go to Cabo San Lucas, where I learned most of my fishing. So by the end of October and November, that'll mark the end of the World Tour 2025. And I have visited all three of my really primary fishing homes, Hawaii, California, and Cabo. And then after that, currently we're running 12 boats. We'll probably shrink down to 6 or 7 at that time.
Okay. So who has to go? Who's gonna lead the fleet?
I don't know, but we can't go this hard. You know, we're traveling every 2 weeks and we don't even know what time zone it is. Biologically, it's just real hard on our bodies, real hard to manage. And, you know, it's our priority right now. I mean, outside of my kids, I really don't have any responsibility other than trying to catch a fish.
Not a bad problem to have, I guess. Well, maybe not.
No, that. It's not. It's a choice. But it's not permanent.
And can you tell me where the name of the Bad Company fleet comes from? I think I already know because I looked up the song on YouTube.
Well, it's pretty funny because, you know, I was my first boat, the one that I'm going to be rebuilding and carrying, that boat's name was Young Guns. I bought it when I was 20 or something like that. And I was, you know, I was pretty aggressive fisherman at the time. And, you know, I was fishing hard and catching stuff. And, you know, guys are always competitive. And then when I sold it and I bought a bigger boat, 37 footer, and of course, whatever in meters that is. I was about to turn, I think, late 20s, so I didn't feel like I was like can call myself Young Guns anymore. And so at the time, I liked the song, I liked the band, and had a little bit of attitude, and was non-conventional. It's unconventional for a boat name back then, and God knows, you know, in the 80s, late 80s, a little unconventional. So I just went with it, and it stuck. And I'm joking around that, you know, after the world tour, when we start to feel old, we're just going to change the name of the boats anyways to from Bad Company to Old Company, and everybody would be happy.
That's nice. Nice way of looking at it.
Yeah.
Do you get sick of hearing the song? I guess people are always like singing it when they see
it. Oh my gosh. Yeah. They're playing social media with the song on it now. So no, it's cute. It's cute.
Can you give me a riff?
No. Absolutely not. No way. That'll scare all of your audiences away.
Can I give you a verse?
Sure.
I'm trying to get in my head to remember how it goes. Can you drop the beat just to remind me?
Jeez, I have no idea. Are you kidding me? You're talking to a guy with absolutely no rhythm. I'm a fisherman.
Can't you be both a fisherman and a DJ?
No. I wish I can.
Maybe I'll say to the audience that horror. Maybe if I had a better voice, I'll blame it on my sore throat.
Yeah.
And so you have a charity, War Heroes in the Water.
I do.
Does that tie into the Bad Company fleet, or are they kind of separate things?
It doesn't really tie in, although, you know, we're going to leverage Bad Company Fishing Adventures. Last year on our fifth annual, we threw out there for an auction for donations. Anybody wants to come on one of the Bad Company Fishing Adventure tour trips, and we had a guy bid $68,000 to come on a trip. It's not his trip. He just wants to tag along, just to hang out with the team.
Just to hang out with you. You're the prize.
No, just hang out with my team for $68,000. And he made a donation for $68,000. And then I had a second guy call me and say, I'll do the same. So we had two $68,000 donations for people that want to come just to tag along and just to see how, you know, a team at this level operates. And they donated, you know, $136,000 to do this. So where He Was on Water benefited from it. This year we're going to do another auction like it. And in the last 5 years, last year we raised $1.6 million. So in 5 years, in our just short 5 year history, we have raised over $5 million, with last year being our highest at $1.6 million.
Wow, that's really impressive.
Yeah, it's been a lot of fun.
And I had a couple of other questions about the crew. So how did you find a crew willing to take? Is Dan your main captain of the Darman?
He is my primary captain on the Darman. We do need to hire a second captain once he switches over to the 175, which is going to be around March or April.
He'll do the switch onto the new boat when she's all ready, basically.
No, he's going to be going over there for the build. So he's going to be basically living in Turkey starting in March. That's the schedule. It's subject to change because of the, you know, the potential delays right now. But so Dan is the primary guy that's going to be running the large Darman. We're going to have to hire somebody to run the Darman 150. I do have a captain here in South Florida that runs the Trinity 144. And then I have one key captain that runs my fishing program, and that's the legendary Steve Lasley. And then I have two other captains that manage the fleet throughout the world. Because out of the 12 boats that we have, eight of them are game boats. Actually, nine of them are game boats, so only nine. Only three are the larger vessels.
So how did you find, are they all fishermen or are they all anglers? Because to me, like a captain on board yachts, you know, they're dealing with an owner or guests who very separate operations, but obviously you're getting stuck in and fishing with them almost. So it's a kind of different relationship.
Yachting and fishing is oil and water. They don't mix. They don't blend. They're two completely different species of crew. So you have to understand both of them to properly be an appropriate and good owner to both, because they're completely different people.
So how did you find Dan? Or how did you find your current captains?
Dan was sourced through a referral through Neil Emmett, actually, at Super Yachts. And all the other ones, and so was Matt that runs my Trinity. He was a referral. And then Steve Lasley that runs my fishing program. I've known of him for decades.
Okay. And you gelled with them all really well, and they were all really on board with the program and, you know, hurtling through different fishing areas and getting the marlin.
They're all very, very engaged. This is a life dream for each and every one of them. In this market, they can have 10 job offers and probably make more money. They have to do this for the right reasons. This is a tour and a project and an event that will go down the history. It really will.
Yeah, I've no doubt. So we'll finish with what I suspect is probably a tricky question, which is your favorite yacht, and you're allowed to say the inbuild from Darman Yachting.
my favorite yacht is my 92 Jones. That's my absolute favorite. If I had to pick just one, There's no question. 92 Jones Goodell would be my favorite. It does everything.
That's the one based in California. Is that right?
Yes. It lives in Cabo San Lucas, but now it's going through her second refit. So we're completely, redoing her right now.
And she's one of your kind of earlier purchases.
Yes. Yes. I've had her for over 10 years.
So the sentimental value.
Yes. Yes, exactly.
Okay. Well, brilliant. Thank you for listening to this big boat interview. I hope you enjoyed it. Don't forget to tune in every week for news and updates from the Boat Briefing podcast, and hopefully you'll be hearing a little bit more from me going forward as well. This episode was mixed and produced by Grace Nielsen and is a production of Boat International Media. Don't forget to subscribe, and we'll see you next time.